welcome to episode 555 of the MTG Goldfish Podcast. I'm Seth, probably better known as Saffron Olive, and we have this small crew here this week. Krim, still making his way back from MagicCon Atlanta, but I'm joined by the owner of MTG Goldfish, Richard. How are you this fine Monday, Richard?
Good morning, Seth. They decided to release like every announcement ever this weekend. There's so much to talk about and so much to discuss.
Oh boy, it's going to be a good one. So yes, our topics today, pretty straightforward. We had a pro tour this weekend. We're going to talk about that a little bit. We got all of next year's Magic sets. Well, minus one, sort of, that's still TBD, but we kind of know what it is probably. But we had all of next year's sets announced, and we got a bunch of Lorwyn spoilers. So those are our big topics for today. If there's time at the end, we might talk a little bit more about two-pick draft, sneak in a fish mail, but that's the plan. Before we get into it, though, a reminder that today's show is brought to you by Card Conduit, and Card Conduit's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use your curated service where you send in as many cards as you want with a buy list value of a dollar or more and pay just a 5% service fee. And if you want to do a bit of work, you can use our sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance and pay just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results in a fast payment once your order is processed, and you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/mtggoldfish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. So thank you and Card Conduit for supporting the show. And let's talk some Magic, and we have so much to discuss today. Let's start with, I think, the easiest one. We had a Modern Pro Tour, Pro Tour Edge of Eternities this weekend. I enjoyed the event a lot. I don't know if you had a chance to watch any of it, Richard. Did you spend any time watching Pro Tours?
No, I refuse. No. First of all, why is it Pro Tour Edge of Eternities? Shouldn't it be Pro Tour Spider-Man?
That is a good question.
That's super awkward that they're promoting Edge of Eternities the last set while spoiling like 20 sets that, you know, that same weekend. But it was Modern, right? So all the Modern enthusiasts came out. I didn't watch it, but I saw the deck list and it looks interesting, Seth. When Belcher is tier one, is that really a good format? I know you said this is the best Modern has ever been and you really enjoy Modern, but I cannot wrap my head around Belcher being tier one and everyone happy about it. So can you give us a breakdown of what Modern looks like after this Pro Tour?
Okay, so just to clarify, not the best Modern has ever been, but the best it's been in several years. I still think 2015 was like peak Modern for me, but the best it's been in a while. So Modern right now, it looks a lot like Modern always has, in the sense that it's very diverse. If you look at the top eight of this event, there were six different decks. There was one repeat, which was the Belcher deck. Otherwise, you had six different archetypes. And the metagame was mostly like that from day one. I think the top deck was like 15 or 16% of the meta, compared to some standard Pro Tours where you've had 43% of the meta, 42% of the meta, is it Cutter or whatever. So it's very diverse. It's also very unfair, I would say. It's a very combo-heavy meta where you got Belcher, you have these prowess decks that are super fast, you got Amulet Titan, you had Neoform in the top eight, you got Esper Gorios looking to reanimate Atraxa turn two. So it was a lot of blue decks, a lot of unfair decks. There was some Azorius Control that did well being a fair deck. There's also some Blink decks that are kind of fair decks. But I would say the format right now, combo-heavy, but very diverse. Yes, having Belcher at the top of the meta, I actually think it's kind of interesting. Do you not like that deck, Richard? Do you think that Belcher being like one of the best decks in the format, it was the most played deck on day one. Do you think that's a bad thing?
It's bad if you like any color that's not blue. I mean, I think it's kind of interesting. Like the deck is sweet, right? So it runs like all the MDFCs and it actually has a lot of free interaction between Force of Negation, Flare of Denial, and I'm sure Jawari Disruption actually came up, right? But if you're not playing blue, how can you stop any of these things, right? So you've actually warped it into Legacy Light, where it's you can play whatever you want as long as blue is here and you're playing, you know, all the free counter magic. Like, where's green? And I guess Amulet Titan is holding down the green fort, but we are far from an actual mid-range deck getting it done. So it's interesting, but I don't know about this blue-centric meta and how we've become Legacy Light.
I think it's definitely true that it feels like Legacy Light. And I think the success of the Belcher deck, really drives that home, because I think what Belcher figured out that most decks couldn't figure out was how to turn Flare of Denial into an actual force of will. And I think that's a big part of the power of the deck, is they actually get to play Flare of Denial as a free counter spell, and they play just like Felici Archaeologist, Thunder Trap Trainer, these cantripping cheap creatures that dig for your spells anyway, and you just sacrifice them to Flare of Denial. So I think it really feels very much like a Legacy deck. I don't know what we do about this. I guess, is it a bad thing? Legacy has been a successful format where it's, you know, 60-70% Force of Will deck, so everyone's playing blue. Is Modern just taking its place as like the eternal format that's going to be warped around blue decks?
I would like to play the four other colors. And
I splash them with your blue, Richard.
Like Legacy, you're like, well, it's Brainstorm Force of Will format, and it's been like that forever. So if you touch it, people will riot. Like, you can't just be like, I'm going to ban Brainstorm and Force of Will, right? Yeah. You can't do that. But Modern doesn't need to be like this, or I don't know, does it? Maybe this is what we want, right? Because I'm sure when Modern Horizons 4 comes out, we'll get another free counter spell, right? So here we are. But I would like to play a 2-drop 4-5 and have it do something, you know, and not just scoop instantly because, you know, turns out you're not playing free counter magic. You can't compete unless they give it to like other colors. Like Tarmogoyf, you can sack it to counter. You can counter
sack a non-counter spell.
Yeah, right? Like that's the problem, right? Like, all the other colors don't see play in Legacy. And I know there's some random rogue decks here or there, or they're like supplemental colors, right? But it is blue or bust, right? Or if you're not playing blue, you better be so degenerate, like, you know, like a ace, like Goryeo's Vengeance, which is also a blue deck, but it's like super degenerate and fast, right?
Let me ask you this, Richard. Do you think this is a reaction to Modern Horizons 3, and specifically Boros Energy? Because if you just look at the Modern metagame page as a whole, right now the number one deck is still Boros Energy. Belcher's creeping up on it, but Boros Energy 12.4%, Belcher's just over 10%, then you get Eldrazi Tana 8.7%. The way I kind of see this is Boros Energy has been at the top of the meta for almost 2 years now. It's really good. If you're going to play some sort of fair deck, there's pretty much no reason to not play Boros Energy. If you want to attack and block with creatures and do that, it just does it better than everything else. And then I see all these combo decks is kind of being a reaction to that, where you're like, okay, if you have this really good fair deck that's going to kill me on turn 4, turn 5, well, I'll just Belcher you in combo before you can go off. I'll Amulet Titan you and kill you before you can make a ton of Ocelot Pride tokens. I'll just reanimate Atraxa and not care about your Guide of Souls. Do you think it's actually the power of the energy deck that, like, pushed the meta into this combo format as a way to deal with it? Is the problem actually still Boros Energy, I guess, is my question. Like, is it causing the blue meta as a way to be able to defeat that deck, maybe?
Maybe, but what beats these combo decks? Apparently nothing, right? Because it's like they're all like, it's not like Belcher is overpowered, right? But like everything in this top eight is like unfair, except this one Azorius control player. Was this Krim like cosplaying? No. But like there's just one control. Everyone else is just like, yo, I'm killing you on turn 3, you know? Like, I don't know if we have the tools to deal with it, but like, maybe you have like a mid-range blue deck, like a Delver deck, you know, like that's what Legacy's answer to this is, right? Like, I still play much creatures, I tempo you out, and I'm going to like stacks you or slow you down with like dazes and wastelands and stuff like that, and then I'll finish you, but I still have counter magic to stop this, right? So you can't just like glass cannon go in. You actually need to like kind of build up your hand and set up the defenses and slow you down. So maybe that's where we end up going. It is interesting though. I mean, it looks very diverse, and you know, I don't know, right? It's just, what about green cards? That's my problem. Yeah. What about black cards, right? Like, what about red cards, you know? Like, do we play these anywhere anymore?
No, I mean, so there is a lot of red. There is prowess, red splashed with blue. There is a lot of red splashed with blue, but as far as being mono red, not really. I don't know if you saw, like, what about the blink deck? Did you see the blink? Look at the deck that, like, Reed Duke. I know Reed finished 6-4. Reed started out 1-4, and then I think he finished 10-4 or something like that. Like, he went on some huge heater to get back from a horrible start.
Garbage but, like, time stats.
But that's a pretty fair deck, though. Like, you're kind of just blinking things and doing Quantum Riddler. You got no free counters in the main deck. I don't even know. I guess there's a Spidey Sense in the sideboard, some Consigned to Memories. But so, yes, even the fair decks are kind of blue-based. I'm not sure how we get out of that, though. Like, is Thoughtseize? What about Thoughtseize, Richard? There is a huge lack of Thoughtseize. When I think of traditional modern, I think of that as being one of the linchpins of the format. I don't really see Thoughtseize decks as even being a thing. Like, they don't even exist.
You guys, I am from the future. So I called out Fatal Push as the death of Tarmogoyf, and you guys beamed on me so long. You can beam on me till this day, but it really was. Thoughtseize sucks, man. There's so much redundancy. You're just going down a mana, taking two life, and they're going to... I know it's a meme, like, they top deck the card they need, but it's not really a meme because everyone's playing, like, 12 copies of, like, the same thing for, like, all their combo pieces, right? So, like, they are going to top deck it. Every card in their hand is going to kill you. Like, you really don't have any good Thoughtseize targets. And the Blink deck is a mid-range deck, but it runs four Force of Negations. It runs, like, Lavinia, right? It runs Teferis, right? Like, it's running all the stacks pieces and, like, the blue Disruption as well. So... yeah, it's mid-range, but it's blue mid-range, right?
All right, let me ask you this, and then we'll move on because we got so much to get to today. Would you rather have this or the last Standard Pro Tour? Like, would you rather watch a very diverse modern Pro Tour where everything's kind of blue and combo-y, or would you rather see a not very diverse Standard Pro Tour where at least you're not all free counter magic and, like, whatever. You have fair decks that exist, but it's very skewed towards, like, one or two decks.
I mean, this every time. Like, yeah. Okay, I don't want to play modern, right? But I like watching it, you know? Like, it looks interesting, right? Like, there's a lot of different decks, and it's like the legacy argument. It's very diverse as long as you play blue. You know what I mean? Like you can do lots of things. You just have to be constrained by running four Force of Negations as, like, the first thing in your deck.
Honestly, I'd rather have that than needing to run four Ragavans or four One Rings. Yeah. So I think I can deal with that for the time being. I do got to give a shout out to the Blue White Control deck. Sadly, it came in second, but it warmed my heart that this deck in 2025, its way to actually win the game is putting an Orym's Chant under an Isochron Scepter. And I think I've told this story before, but I literally learned how to play Magic against someone who had a tier extended Scepter Chant deck. And I was playing, like, my casual Mirrored in Black charge counter deck. And I would win like 5% of the time. I just got beaten down, could never cast a spell. And somehow it got me hooked on Magic, this experience of just not being able to play the game. And it probably explains a lot about why I love playing Prison decks today. If you go back, that's probably my origin story, but it was super cool to see this old combo from like 20 years ago actually kind of find its footing in modern in 2025.
You know what blows my boomer mind, Seth? Like, this Azorius control deck meant to go long, zero Jace the Mind Sculptors. Like, zero. We don't need no Jace, right? Like, Jace too slow, right? We're playing like Supreme Verdict, like uncounterable stuff, right? We're just using Narset and Teferis. It's like a half stacks deck, right? Like, you're really kind of just like stacking your opponent down.
It really is.
Maintaining some semblance of control. And, like, I don't know what you even finished them with, like Solitudes. Like, after you lock them, how do you kill them? You're just hitting them with Solitudes very slowly.
Yeah, mostly the games I saw people just scoop once you get them actually locked. But yeah, it is kind of bounce your stuff with Teferi, attack you with Solitudes, eventually you kill you. So yeah, it's very slow, but it is cool to see an old combo actually working again. Oh, speaking of Pro Tour, so now we're going to move on to these set announcements. I'm curious what you think about this. So there's so many announcements this weekend. One of the stealthy ones that snuck in, there's a Pro Tour next year where the top eight is going to be limited. What do you think? Does that appeal to you, Richard? Like, we haven't had in decades now a Pro Tour where the top eight is a draft. Would you watch a Pro Tour where they're drafting for the top eight rather than playing Constructed?
Is it Spider-Man pick two? But
it's actually Marvel superheroes, which we'll talk about in a minute. But
as a giant fan of Limited, this was very exciting, but this seems like a backwards move. Like, the Limited section is the, like, skipped part. Like, I'm sure if you can look at, like, Wizards, like, metrics, you'll see, like, a giant skip whenever, you know, whenever Limited comes on. Whenever it's a weird time zone, you're always like, oh, thank goodness, because, you know, there's at least like four rounds of Limited, so I can get some sleep in before I watch round four, where like the good stuff starts, right? So while exciting for like 17 land enjoyers, I think overall this seems bad, but I mean, it's the only way to showcase the new cards, right? Because I am sure during Pro Tour Edge of Eternities, we saw like zero Edge of Eternities cards, maybe like two. right? But if your top
Quantum Riddler, that's about it.
During Constructed, I mean, right? But if your top eight is Edge of Eternity's draft, you're guaranteed to see the new cards. Unfortunately, since they're play boosters, you're not going to see the special treatments and the bonus sheet cards or whatever, but it is a way to actually showcase the new products, which is the point of this Pro Tour to begin with.
And I wonder if that was part of the reasoning where we've seen some of the Universes Beyond sets be very commander focused and not have like the biggest impact on 60 card formats. So maybe their thought was we need to have drafts so people actually get to see these new Marvel superhero cards. But yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm a limited
also,
skipper.
New champion, right? I feel most pros are like, okay, I just got to survive limited, like 2-2-1s and then we're good, right? Like, I'm just going to grind my Belcher deck, right? But now you're going to get to the top eight and you're like, oh boy, right? So you got to be like really good at limited and like fundamentals and all that. So the people we see in the top eight here, it's going to be super interesting because
it is.
Everyone's just trying to survive limited, but now it's the main show.
Yeah, I'm excited. I don't know about actually the gameplay is the problem. Like, I like watching people draft, but watching gameplay of limited is kind of meh. So I tend to watch the actual draft and then skip the gameplay. But I'm going to have to watch it for this one, just see what happens. But let's move on. We got so much to get to. The biggest news of this weekend is they announced every Magic the Gathering set in 2026. So the entire next year of sets, we were speculating on this a little bit last week. We already knew a couple of them. I guess technically there's an unannounced Universes Beyond set, but Richard, why don't you guide us through this list of seven sets? I guess actually before to the sets, what do you think of seven standard sets? So we're already saying that six was too much. Now we're going up to seven next year. That's a set every 53 days, I think someone mathed it out.
It doesn't really matter because most of the cards don't see standard play, right? I mean, like, really, true. It doesn't matter, but it's just more stuff. Like, we're doing Spider-Man right now, okay? And, like, we Spider-Man's been released for, like, a week, and here we are talking about the next, like, seven sets, and for some reason, Pro Tour Edge of Eternity is happening. So we're just going to get this, like, big mess of stuff going on, like too much information, but like, is seven really that more atrocious than six? I don't know. It's like, at some point it's like all the same, right? So I guess I'm okay with that. What's interesting is the contents. So let's go through the product announcements. Final Fantasy holiday release scene boxes, four scene boxes with six exclusive new cards, okay? They showcase some random things like Birds of Paradise as a reskinned card, Paradise Chocobo, new cards. So you have new cards like the Destined Warrior, the Destined White Mage. What's the card called? There's a card called Flash Photography in here, which is the greatest card ever released.
Oh, that card's ramp. Yeah, that's pretty good.
Okay. They also have the new anime art styles of existing cards. So like Cloud, Midgar Mercury, Yuna, Hope of Spira. The art looks amazing, by the way. And then new lands. There's a new WPN promo, which I'm not even sure. Is that Yuna in a wedding dress? I'm not really sure what's going on over here. We're going full waifu. Like. So Final Fantasy Part 2. You know, did Spider-Man screw up Wizard sales? I don't know, but Final Fantasy coming to the rescue, right? To end up Q4 with a banger, right?
We saw this with Lord of the Rings, right? It's the same exact playbook as Lord of the Rings. Release the set in the summer, do the holiday release with a few new cards, a bunch of variants in the winter. It worked for Final Fantasy, or it worked for Lord of the Rings. I imagine it's going to work here as well. The only question is, like, how expensive is it going to be? Can we get our hands on this, or is it going to be super, super hard to get? But I expect this one's going to do well.
Yeah. All right. Lorwyn Eclipsed. We got a bunch of previews for it. We're going to hold off on that because we're actually going to explicitly talk about a bunch of cards. But Lorwyn Eclipsed coming with the traditional style. It looks like Lorwyn. Like, whatever you think Lorwyn looks like, it looks like it. It's not like, you know, Kamigawa Neon Dynasty, right? And then there's a serialized card. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now for the juicy things. Unannounced Universes Beyond set.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
We don't know, right? But this is likely the Nickelodeon thing, right? Most likely Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Secrets of Strixhaven. We already know about that one. And then now for the new stuff. Marvel Superheroes. It's just called Superheroes. The picture had like a just like random Marvel superheroes like Wolverine in there. So it's what you thought Spider-Man probably should have been. It's like
exactly. That's what I was going to say.
The best superheroes from across all the different franchises like in here. Okay? Like they showed like I forgot to pick like there's like Black Panther in there, Wolverine, etc., etc.
Yeah.
August 2026. Return to Middle-earth, baby. The Hobbit.
Yeah.
You're saying, Seth? I cut you off.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're going to go through. Just go through all of them. I'm sorry. I'll let you go through all of them. Yeah.
Another in-universe set. Reality Fracture. I don't know what it is. It's going to finish the current story arc of Magic, which I don't know what that is. Okay, so Reality Fracture. And then finally, to go where no one has gone before. I don't even know how that goes. Everyone called it when we had legendary,
far away,
legendary spacecraft. We have the more affordable of the space IPs, Star Trek.
No, you might not be wrong, actually.
Oh, Star Trek. Is there a new Star Trek? I don't know. What are we on? I don't know what we're on. I only watched the original. And then like Next Generation, I think. But I don't know. But Star Trek is coming to Magic the Gathering, hot off of Edge of Eternity's Pro Tour. So those are all the new products. And then asterisk, a bunch of secret layers, which we'll get through after we discuss these new sets.
So Richard, so I will say, I think the in-universe sets, we'll talk more about Lorwyn Eclipse in a minute. It looks exactly like what I would want out of Lorwyn Eclipse. Secrets of Strixhaven, whatever, I'm sure it's going to be fine. I'm not the biggest Strixhaven fan, but I'm sure they'll do a fine job. I don't know what to think of Reality Fracture. I watched the stream while they were announcing this, and they were super cagey, and they played it up like, we're doing stuff we've never done before. It's going to, you know how Mero gets. He gets so hyped up and excited when he talks, but we're doing stuff we've never done before. It's going to be awesome, but we can't really tell you anything about it. So I have no idea what plane we're on, what it's going to be about. What I'm really curious about, though, Richard, is what do you think about these Universes Beyond sets? So my initial take is The Hobbit should be good because Lord of the Rings was good. I think if they just make Lord of the Rings 2.0, it'll go over really well. I don't know. I've heard some people be like, oh, The Hobbit's, it's way shorter. There's not as many characters. So maybe it's going to feel a little more Spider-Man-y. I don't know enough about The Hobbit, but I hope it's going to be good. What do you think about The Hobbit? Like, it should just be another banger, right? Lord of the Rings 2.0, going to sell well, everyone loves it? Or is The Hobbit way worse somehow?
It's a smaller story and less characters and less, like, I don't know, like archetypes, you know? So I don't know. I feel it might be too close to Spider-Man, right? Because while trying to figure out what went wrong with Spider-Man, looking at Lord of the Rings, you're like, wow, it's like three books worth of stuff. And there's just, like, so many side characters. And, like, they're not just, like, side characters. They're, like, kind of primary characters, right? Whereas The Hobbit, if you ever watched the movie Monstrosities, where they took one small book and stretched it into three movies, and, it no one liked it, right? It was pretty bad. So if Wizards goes that route, I think it's doomed. So I don't know. I don't know if they can reproduce Lord of the Rings with this. Because, like, do you just want, like, one archetype, which are, like, hobbits? Right? I don't know, right? And what are we gonna do about the One Ring? Are we reprinting the One Ring here? Are we making another serialized One Ring? Like, what's going on with that, right?
I imagine they reprint it, right? Like, I was gonna ask you that. Do you think we see One Ring or Bowmasters? Like, can they reprint some of the expensive cards from the first time? I don't think they'll serialize the One Ring again. I think maybe they do serialized, I don't know, Frodo or something, or maybe something else. But I do think that they could reprint the One Ring, and that would probably be a positive.
I hope they don't, because
do you hope,
like,
really?
It's different. Like, it's a different story. Like, the One Ring, I guess, is okay, but, like, Orcish Bowmasters, like, doesn't really belong here. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's like a prequel, right? Like, it's a different timeline.
Oh, okay.
So I hope it's not. It's like young Bilbo, right? Like, it's different, right? And, like, I don't know, like, Smaug is, like, the focal point. Are they just going to reprint Smaug? I hope not. They're going to print a new Smaug, right? And then are you going to have, like, how many Smaugs are you going to have? I don't know. So it's interesting how they will approach this. But it is high fantasy, which is what everyone is clamoring for.
Right.
So you're
going to
get, like, generic elves and dwarves and whatnot. So it'll probably do fine. But I don't know if it's going to hit Lord of the Rings level. Or if is Lord of the Rings level even acceptable anymore? I don't even know, right? Because maybe we're on to Final Fantasy levels now, right? Yeah. When your collector boosters are only like $400, is that a success or a failure? I'm not sure, but it'll be interesting.
That is a good point. What about, okay, so Marvel Superheroes, like you said, my first reaction was, why was this not the first Marvel set? If you're going to do Marvel, this is what my brain would think of as a Magic Marvel set. You get all the heroes, you put them all in there. This has got to go over better than Spider-Man, right? Like, the reaction to Spider-Man, at least from the franchise community, has not been good. This has got to be better. They can't mess it up again, right?
I don't know, Seth. I feel that. The community response to Spider-Man is so strong that I don't think this could save it. You know what I mean? Like, is someone really like, oh, you know, I just didn't like Spider-Punk, but if they give me Wolverine, I'm going to eat it up. I feel like the intersection of comic book goers and Magic players is actually very low. We'll see what the final sales are, but at least from the enfranchised community, I don't see Reddit singing praises about Marvel superheroes, given how much they hated Spider-Man. So I don't know that this will save it, but like, again, even if you go through all your top heroes, it runs out pretty quick for the average person. You know what I mean? You're like, Spider-Man, Captain America, Iron Man, Wolverine, and then like it starts falling off real quick, right? And then, you know, do you know who Colossus is, Seth? Are you going to be pleased about that? Is that any different than Spider's Man? You know, like, is it really any different?
His name is different. There's different letters in its name. So, yes, it's slightly better at least. But, yeah, I mean, I guess that is a problem. I'm hoping it's just, like, heroes versus villains. That's what I associate with all this stuff. Have a bunch of heroes, have a bunch of villains, have them fight it out. Maybe it'll make Spider-Man look a little better because some of the stuff we talked about, like, oh, there's villains, but there's not enough villains to actually build a deck out of. Or why is there a bunch of heroes in this set, but they don't really do anything? Like, maybe that'll make more sense in the context of the superhero set. Do you think it would have changed if they released a set first? Like, was Wizards' big blunder in all this, like, changing the schedule at the last minute, trying to push up Spider-Man, moving back Lorwyn Eclipse? Should they have just, like, chilled a little bit and maybe released Superheroes as the first Marvel set and then done Spider-Man a year or two from now after people already had seen this set?
Yes, I would have went with Superheroes first. You might as well get all your, like, big hitters in there. Like, here's the problem, right? Like, there's more Marvel sets coming down the pipeline. So do you use all your good heroes here and just have duplicates? Like, let's say there's an X-Men set coming. Are you going to put all the X-Men into Superheroes? Or are you going to hold them all out for the X-Men specific set, which already has the problem of, like, we don't have enough characters to fill the setup, right? So, like, do you think Spider-Man is going to be in Superheroes? He must be, right? He has to be in here, right?
I would imagine with something like Spider-Man, maybe there's a Spider-Man. I imagine you're not going to focus super hard, but I could see throwing in a Spider-Man. All right, what about the last one, Richard? I got to say, personally, this is the one I'm most sus of as far as being, like, I don't
Wait,
know.
Aren't you an Edge of Eternities fan? Why could you? How can you be sus about this?
I like Edge of Eternities. I don't know. Is Star Trek adjacent enough? Something the Hasbro CEO has talked about is the really good universes beyonds have that adjacency to magic. Like, Lord of the Rings has a high fantasy feel. Even Final Fantasy kind of has that high fantasy feel. Do you think that Star Trek is close enough? Did Edge of Eternities make it close enough? Does it make space feel magic-y enough now? Or are people going to be like, this isn't real magic? Are we going to have that kind of reception? Like, what do you I don't know what to expect from Star Trek. I'm really in the middle on this one.
All right, let me disclaim before I say anything that I'm a Star Trek hater, okay? I'm Star Wars all the way, like not even close, okay? So take what I say with a grain of salt, but Star Wars is sci-fi fantasy, okay? There's like the Force, lightsabers, you know, it's like very fantasy-ish. To me, Star Trek is more sci-fi-ish, like very like traditional sci-fi. And I don't think it fits in the magic world, but I didn't think Edge of Eternities fit in the magic world either, whereas I would think Star Wars does. Now, does this make any sense? I don't know, Seth, but that's like what my brain computes,
okay,
right? Like, you know, like,
I see where you're going.
This is more sciencey, you know, and I don't know, right? I watched the original Star Trek, a lot of it. Like, it was on syndication or whatever when I was a kid, so I actually watched a lot of it. William Shatner all the way, right? And then I watched some Next Generation, and then whatever the last, like, 25 years of Star Trek was, I didn't watch. I watched the movies, I guess. I watched all of the big movies, but I haven't watched anything since. So I have no idea what current Star Trek even looks like. Maybe it's more fantasy-ish, or maybe it's exactly Edge of Eternities. I don't know. But if we did Edge of Eternities, Star Trek doesn't seem like a big leap. And everyone who loved Edge of Eternities, you can't say Star Trek doesn't fit, right? Like, can you really say that now? Can you say that? Can you really say that?
Okay. Yeah. I get what you're saying. And that is a fair point. I think what gets me is, like, from the little bit we've seen of it, it's another, like, IRL actory type set. It's another, like, we saw the art that they showed off. It's like, oh, that's William Shatner. I remember that guy. Like, and it's just straight up actors on cards. So it's not like the Lord of the Rings, we're reinterpreting it, or even Final Fantasy, that's real characters, but they're animated characters. They're not real people. So for some reason, sets that just have real people and actors in them just tends to rub me the wrong way. So I think that's the part I most, like, skeptical of, is it's just another set where we're using, like, actual humans that exist. I think the space part will be cool. I like just, like, space art. That part is interesting to me. I also am not a big Star Trek guy. I've watched all of, like, the main Star Wars, so I know them, and I've seen some episodes of Star Trek, but I never was, like, a Trekkie that watched the entire show or anything. But I guess I'm like you in the sense that if I had to choose between the two, I would say the Star Wars probably fits better. Do you think there's a chance they do Star Wars, Richard? Why Star Trek over Star Wars?
I think, like, Hasbro CEO, like, at night has, like, this list, right, of, like, stuff he really wishes, like, his Christmas wish list, and on there, Star Wars is sitting there near the top, okay? And, like, Star Trek is, like, somewhere way down there, and Star Wars, I think, would go hard. Like, I don't know, we have to Google it, but I'm sure Star Wars as a franchise makes, like, a lot more than Star Trek as a franchise. It's just much bigger. So yeah. I think we will eventually get Star Wars. But I don't know, right? We kind of screwed the pooch with Spider-Man, right? So if Disney is like, I see your middling results, I don't want to sully the name of Star Wars, then maybe not. But I think if all goes Wizard's way, we will get Star Wars at some point, which makes me very excited because you can sit down and play your Star Wars deck versus your Star Trek deck and see
once and for all. We can settle some questions. Yeah,
and then Edge of Eternities is also in the pod, like, for a little bit of me, guys.
Tannic comes in and, yeah, slaps Shatner and runs away. All right, so speaking of Chris Cox's Hasbro CEO list of upcoming potential IPs that he'd love to do, where, Richard, do you think Dwight from The Office was on that list? I'm curious.
Seth, I have an announcement. Today, the war was lost at MagicCon Atlanta. Like, I think we have officially crossed the line. Like, every fear that every Universes Beyond hater ever had, and even me, like, I love Universes Beyond at this point. This is too much. We have Dwight from The Office as Helion Suncrowned for some reason, as Garrick Relentless, Dwight.
Yeah,
not only Dwight, but the actor was it Rainn Wilson.
Rainn Wilson, yeah.
Yeah, like it's actually just him on the cards.
That's it.
What is going on? Did we buy The Office? Did Hasbro buy the like? Why are there The Office cards? And to me, this is the most egregious break from our world. Like, I know people don't like Spider-Man, but, like, that's still comic book fantasy. You know what I mean? Like, people have spectacular powers. You expect them to do crazy things. And, like, the art style, like, I don't know, right? Like, to me, that didn't seem like a big departure. But, like, why am I playing with Dunder Mifflin employees? Like, what is... I love The Office. I watched every single episode of The Office, including some points after Michael Scott left. I don't remember how far I went. But I watched the whole thing. I love The Office, okay? But this is not the time and the place, guys. And I feel this is done. Like, we're getting Geico next, Seth. We're getting State Farm. This is okay.
It goes back to the original memes when they announced all this stuff about Attack with a Can of Mountain Dew or, like, the Geico stuff. Like, if this really is as close as we've gotten to that. I will say they finally printed a secret lair drop that I know the IP of, because I also watched The Office up until when Michael left. So I actually know this one a little bit. And it is a funny show. it does not really seem to fit Magic. I don't know, these, they don't seem like serious cards to me. They seem like a novelty, I guess, and maybe that's okay, but this seems to me like a novelty gift. Like, you have a friend that really likes The Office, so you buy this secret lair drop, and it's like, haha, you know, you got these Magic cards that have Dwight on them. It's hard for me to really take it seriously. At the same time, it's also hard for me to get too upset about secret lair drops that don't have new cards in them. I think, like, yes, they kind of are cringy to me personally, but the odds of them impacting my life are so low, right? Like, what are the odds that I ever actually have to play against a Dwight Schrute in the wild? Like, it's probably pretty low.
Let me tell you,
right?
My MagicCon Vegas deck.
Oh, no. But you don't even play Swords to Plowshares, Richard. You don't play these cards.
No, I won't. No, I'm not going to play these. So, to me, so if you want to put Dwight from The Office in here, okay. But he needs to be a human token. Like, the fact that you're calling him Garrick Relentless or Helion Suncrowned is, like, yeah, terrible. Like it's too much, right? Like, if you want to put Dwight here, he should be a 1/1 that, like, dies to literally everything. And, like, that's what you get for putting an office worker in the middle of, like, this war zone. You know what I mean? So,
I can't. I can't do this.
Let me ask you about this then, Richard. They announced so many secret lairs. How do you feel about The Last of Us drops, which are also, you know, real actors? I guess they're more violent. There's more of a, not fantasy aspect, but there's arrows and bows and fighting and zombies and stuff. Like, do you feel the same way about, like, Joel Resolute Survivor or Ellie Brickmaster? No. Like, no, those are okay?
Okay. Because, like, their whole story is they survived the zombie apocalypse, right? They're certified badasses, right? Like, you know, it's like, I don't, like, you know, there are plenty of humans in the world of Magic that do extraordinary things, right? And some of them are even 4/4s and 5/4s, which are, like, crazy if you think about, because, like, a hill giant is a 3/3, right? And a grizzly bear is, like, a 2/2. And, like, yeah, I don't know, like, a gorilla is, like, what, a 2/3, right? And you're like, how many, you know the internet meme, like, how many humans, how many men does it take to take down a gorilla, right? And it's only a 2/3. Okay, current ape is a 2/3, right? So these, like, 4/4 humans, they're like, oh my goodness, they're like John Wicks, right?
Massive. But
I can get behind Joel Resolute Survivor. That's a PlayStation lair, right? I can get behind the Uncharted lair, Nathan Drake. Like, it's still, like, fantasy, video game fantasies with real people, but they're doing extraordinary things. Dwight Schrute. Okay. Is an office employee that sells paper and paper accessories.
Assistant to the regional manager. Do you think it'll sell well? So I obviously, when they're announcing all this stuff this weekend, I was tweeting about all of it. Out of all the announcements and all the stuff I tweeted, it was definitely the Dwight secret lair drop that got the most interaction, the most retweets. Like, that was the thing everyone was talking about out of all these announcements. A lot of people hated it and thought it was cringe and the worst thing ever. But then there were some people who were like, I can't wait to buy this. It was actually very much like a split reaction. I would say mostly negative, but there were plenty of people that were like, this is the greatest thing ever. I cannot wait to give my money to Wizards to get Dwight Schrute cards. How do you think this will do? Is this going to sell out instantly? Are we wrong?
I think this one will do well because there are a lot of crims out there and they're going to be like, it's stupid, but I'm going to buy it to, like, make you angry and, like, just to stick it to you, right? So I actually think this is going to do well, but
troll purposes.
I think the second or third office secret lair type cards will do abysmally. That is my guess.
Yeah.
Right? But I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Wizards onto something and, like, this is the greatest secret lair of all time. But, like, we've had some of these that just go by quietly, like Monty Python, Princess Bride, but you're like, it's close. Like, I can see how they stretch it and, like, it's a thing. Or like SpongeBob, I think, is actually great because it's so, like, out there that you're like, oh, I get it, right? But this is too Uncanny Valley, right? Like, this is, like, too close. This is not, I don't know, this is, like, too close. So
SpongeBob, you could just embrace as a meme and just take it for what it was, as it was supposed to be a meme. These are, like, look like they're supposed to kind of be somewhat serious cards that just also look like memes, which makes it feel different. Is there something they could print that would make you just be like, I can't do it anymore. Like, could they print a secret lair drop with an IP on it that you were just like, I'm full-time One Piece player now. I'm done with magic. Like, is that even possible?
The Office?
That's actually about as bad as it gets for you. Yeah, okay.
If they keep making these, okay? Like, so I don't think they're going to do this, but if for whatever reason, next year, all the Universe Beyond sets are like The Office and like all the secret layers are The Office, then I'm like, okay, it's too much. If they randomly throw it in here once in a while, I'm like, okay, it's not for me. And yeah, it sucks. But like, you know, like you said, like, what are the percentages that you'll actually see it in the wild?
Yeah.
But, you know, 2027, if it's the State Farm secret lair followed by the Geico secret lair followed by the Red Bull secret lair followed by, you know, whatever, yeah, then you're like, okay, what are we doing here? Right?
Yeah. You know? The more it feels like a commercial, like an ad, the harder it gets for me, I think. And at least The Office is over now. It would be, I guess, I'm more awkward if they were actually advertising an active show. But yeah, let us know what you think about this one. I'm curious.
This is not the only controversial one. There are many secret layers, Seth.
Whoa. What else is controversial?
How about Furby the Gathering?
Oh, this one makes perfect sense.
The Odd Bodies. Now, it's Furby, which does Hasbro own Furby? Hold on. Let me double check.
They do.
Okay, this makes sense.
Yep. Yep.
So I'm going to keep it a buck with you, Seth. I think these are great.
So when you like them?
When I heard Furby, I'm like, oh my God, we've gone full shill. How is Furby not just loot? You know, like, it's actually,
it's pretty similar.
The art kind of just fits like Umbra's Fear Manifest, Serum Visions. Like, I'm like, actually, it's not bad. And you know what, like, makes it like A+? Tamiyo's Safekeeping, where you actually have the streams crossing. Like, you have Tamiyo and Furby on one picture. We've never had that before with Universes Beyond, right? They've always been in their own separate world. But I guess because Hasbro owns both, they're like, yeah, here is Tamiyo holding a Furby. And it's just like some weird critter that you would find on Bloomberg or wherever, you know, OM1 Gleam came from, right? Like, it's just weird, but it kind of works. It's not that bad.
I thought they were really going to offend me when I heard, like, day one of the Magic Con, there was, like, rumors, and I was like, oh, there's this Furby booth. They're going to be announcing something with Furbies, and I was getting myself amped up to be very, like, oh, my God, this is so bad. And then when I actually saw them, would I actually buy them and play with most of them? Probably not, personally. But they are actually, they're pretty fine, and some of them actually look kind of cool. Even, like, just the art on some of them, especially the Duya Luya one or whatever it is.
Explore.
Like,
Explore, like, is a banger.
Just has, yeah, the Explore, I would legitimately play that card. Like, unironically play that card, just because it looks really cool. So, yeah, that one actually ended up being way better than I expected. I was ready to really hate it, but now I'm just kind of like, yeah, whatever. Like, I don't care. Like, it's kind of fine, actually. The Iron Maiden ones I kind of like. They're also kind of weird because I don't know how I feel about bands.
It's a rock band.
I don't know how I feel about bands being on cards, but like, kind of the super iconic metal-y art, like, I can see what they're going for, trying to get the metalheads in there with it.
So there's two Iron Maiden secret lairs. They've also, like, doubled and tripled down. There's three Furby secret lairs, two Iron Maiden secret lairs. I mean, the art kind of fits. It's kind of weird that it's a band, but like, the art and aesthetic kind of fits, right? And you know, we've done the metal cards or whatever, right, before. So it's like, we kind of saw this coming. And they're not new cards, right? They're just reskinned cards. Same with Furby.
And I can accept a lot when it's reskinned. Like, the bar is much lower. There is a new Jaws, which is actually a new card. And then some of the PlayStation cards are actually unique cards too.
Yeah, so how about Jaws Terror of Amity Island? I'm not going to lie to you, Seth. I saw this on Twitter at first, and I couldn't tell if it was custom proxies or like a real lair. Yeah. I'm like, these look really high quality, but like, wait, Jaws?
Well done, yeah.
Like Jaws? Like, what? It's a new card. So
is.
Jaws is a new card along with four... Wait, is Reckless Endeavor a real card? I can't even tell.
Wait, Reckless Endeavor. Reckless Endeavor. Yeah, that was part of one
card.
Of the. Yeah, that is from. Yeah.
But Jaws Relentless Predator is movie poster style, and it's kind of iconic. And I don't know why it's a red shark, but okay.
I think that's because magic. Sharks are red. Marauding Mako. Like, that's kind of the color. I actually appreciate that they seem to take into consideration what sharks are in magic with this one.
The slander of sharks continues. They're chaotic, violent. Boy. But yeah, so Jaws, Terror of Amity Island. We have some normal secret layers. Artist series, Kieran Yanner.
With a demonic tutor that's like $50. That's out of all these, just from a financial perspective, that's the easiest slam dunk if you need a demonic tutor.
Dreaming Darkly. And then Trick or Treat. So these are all kind of just normal secret layers. And then we have the PlayStation secret layers. So we talked about Last of Us, but what's this game? Uncharted. There's God of War. So you have actually two Kratoses. You have a mono red Kratos. These are all brand new unique cards, by the way. And then Kratos, father-son duel with Atreus, new partners. We have Aloy from Horizon, and then Ghosts of Tsushima. I never played that game. So
yeah, me either.
We have like basically all of PlayStation's like unique IPs represented as cards, brand new unique cards, and they also kind of changed the partner mechanic. Now it's partner dash something. So similar to Friends Forever, where you can only partner with people that had Friends Forever. Now it's partner dash father and son. So all father and sons can partner together. They did that for God of War. And then they also did that for The Last of Us. They have partner survivors with Ellie. What's the guy's name? Joel.
Joel, yeah. I wonder if that'll come up in the future. I guess with The Last of Us drop, there are two of them, so there's four different cards, so you can kind of mission match because they all have that ability. I wonder if we'll see more partner, father, and son in the future that you'll be able to combine these cards with, or if it's a one-off thing. There's also the Dandan drop, which looks really good. It's apparently a full Dandan deck. They haven't announced when it's coming out, but if you haven't tried the Dandan format, it's actually a really fun kind of like a tabletop game almost, where you just keep this one deck and you can play it with your friend and have it forever. Well, it'll be interesting to see how much it costs. I imagine they might sell it for a lot of money, like the Commander deck. So maybe it's $200 or something for the full deck. But the art looks really nice.
Wait, how much is a Dandan deck today?
Oh, I'd have to price it out.
Is Dandan, like their deck list is not the standard Dandan deck list? Is that right? I was reading some discourse about stuff. Is there like a single Dandan agreed upon deck list, or is that in flux?
There is. So there is a like a standard deck list. I think some people change it up if they want to, but there is an actual Dandan deck list that is the deck list.
Is the Wizards one the exact same?
I thought it was, but they haven't actually announced the full deck list. They've just shown off a few of the cards. So I guess I don't know for sure if it's the same. I assume that it was the same, but I guess I don't actually know that.
And who's the creator of Dandan? How do they feel about Wizards taking the Dandan format?
I do know that they were not contacted ahead of time, because that came up on social media that they were not and Wizards didn't let them know ahead of time that they were going to do this. I guess it's just fair game. I think out of respect, if I was Wizards, I probably would have tried to reach out and do like a little collab thing, but I guess when it comes down to it, Wizards owns the cards, and I mean, as we saw with Commander, like if something takes off, they're gonna try to monetize it.
They renamed it though, right? Because it was EDH, and they're like, "Oh, check out Commander, guys."
Commander now. Yeah, that is true.
The Dandan cards actually look nice, but I've never played the format. I don't know what it is.
Oh, you know, next Vegas, Richard, I'm bringing it. I'm bringing the Judge's Tower, and I'll put together a Dandan deck because you will really.
We gotta anger
it's
everyone.
Really fun.
Judge's
it's
Tower, really fun. Dandan. What's better?
The only problem with Dandan is it's 1v1. So you don't get the party game mode like you do with Judge's Tower.
It's 1v1?
Playing. It's a 1v1. It's a 1v1 game, yeah.
Oh, it sounds like something that people get like too serious over and sweaty and then
people
ruins
do,
everything.
People do, yes. People take it very seriously. There's some hardcore Dandanners. Anyway,
wait, is it just a 1v1 game where you share the deck and that's it?
Yeah. Well, no. No, like you share the deck in the graveyard, but you do kind of play like a normal game under those constraints.
We'll try
that. The
Vegas.
Cards in the decks make it unique.
We'll give you our review several months from now.
so before we run out of time today, Richard, we got to talk a little bit about Lorwyn Eclipse, because the cards they spoiled from this set just Oh, they make me so happy. They look just so like Lorwyn. They look like Lorwyn. You could put these cards in a set from 20 years ago and they would fit right in. There's no, you know, huge changes. There's no Universes Beyond. It's just very clearly Lorwyn. And I thought some of these cards looked really powerful, but I was talking to you off cast and you were like, eh, these cards all suck. So I'm curious. We got a couple cards we got to go over because I'm curious if you think they're any good.
All right. You can check them out over at mtgpreviews.com. We got like a whole bunch of them. We also got the special treatments of them. And then we also talked about the serialized cards earlier. But let's talk about emptiness. Four hybrid Orzhov, hybrid Orzhov. So 6 mana, 3/5, creature, elemental incarnation. When this creature enters, if white was spent to cast it, return target creature card with mana value 3 or less from your graveyard to your hand. When this creature enters, if black was spent to cast it, put 3/-1/-1 counters on up to one target creature, evoke hybrid Orzhov, 3/5.
So I will say the first ability, it's to the battlefield. It's not the hand, it's the battlefield.
Oh, sorry,
it's
to the battlefield. Reanimate, yes.
You reanimate the thing. So that's got to be pretty good, right? It's flexible. You can cast it as removal, you can cast it as reanimation. If you get to 6 mana, you can cast it at both. You can evoke into play on cheap. I will say it's a cunning way to fix the evoke problem where you can't really blink this, right? Like the old synergy for original evoke cards is you can like evoke your Muldrifter and ephemerate it and you keep it and you re-trigger it. But because you have to spend the mana on it, you're not going to be able to blink it or reanimate it. You still get the body, but you won't get the abilities off of it. But I feel like one card that's like 2 mana removal or 2 mana reanimate something 3 or less and is still okay on turn 6 when you can get both modes, I feel like that's a pretty solid Magic card.
It's solid, but solid's not enough to see play, is it, Seth? Like,
yeah, I think it is. I think, well, my biggest question with this card is I just
double,
don't know where it fits. I don't know
double
where it fits.
Black for sorcery speed removal. And then, like, are you realistically making it to 6 mana? And can you actually use all these modes? Because if it was 6 mana, -3/-3 something, 3/5, that's, like, horrendous, right? Like, you wouldn't play this, right? So you actually need to reanimate something with it as well. And it's going to come down to, like, what's the scariest mana value 3 thing you can reanimate? But I think this is not exciting because that removal is not real, like, it's double black sorcery speed removal, and it's only -3/-3. Like, that is very cope removal. And most decks aren't going to make it to 6 mana. Only a control deck is going to make it to 6 mana, right? Like, if you're a mid-range deck, this is not aggressive enough. This is not good enough removal. So I actually think this card is kind of mediocre. It's, like, not
interesting.
Exceptional. I mean, you can't combo with it either, right? You can't, like you said, you can't blink it or do weird stuff with it.
No, you do. You can't do the weird stuff with it very well. I don't know. We got stuff like a Pornoculus, which we already see people using Helping Hands to reanimate. So we know there's good 3-drops to reanimate, but maybe it ends up being too clunky. Like, it is true that neither mode is great. Helping Hands, the reanimation mode, is 1 mana. Unearth is 1 mana. So you're kind of paying a little bit of a tax there. And then the removal mode, I think, is actually fairly costed, but it is sorcery speed, which is a drawback, especially in aggro
That's
meta, which we've had lately.
Double black pips, -3/-3. I guess you can shrink, right? Like, if there's a 4/4, you can make it a 1/1. Like, it's like totally scuffed, but it's double black and sorcery speed. Like, you have 2 mana remove anything in standard, right? At instant speed.
Yeah, no, so that's true.
That's a
but
big
could
downgrade.
You imagine them printing that effect at 1 mana? There's no way you have 3 -1/-1 counters for 1 mana. It kind of has to be 2 mana, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you could instant speed it, I think it becomes a lot better. Mm. But
yeah,
again, like,
flash.
Even if you make it to 6, like, this is not ending the game or swinging the game tremendously, right? Like, whenever you come back, like, okay, if you get a Born Oculus with that mana value 3 thing, then maybe, but that's because a Born Oculus is broken, not because of emptiness.
Yeah.
Right?
It is kind of like a grindy value card. It is, yeah. So that's maybe it doesn't line up with every deck, but I think it has a chance to see standard play.
Okay. Here's a good one. Unfortunately, Krim is not here. Bitter Bloom Bearer. Double black. Creature Fairy Rogue. 1/1 flash flying. At the beginning of your upkeep, you lose 1 life and you create a 1/1 blue black fairy creature token with flying.
This has to be good, right?
This has to be good, right?
This can be I know Bitter Blossom is not what it used to be, but this is a Bitter Blossom on a body. The way I see this card, you flash it in on turn two on your opponent's end step, untap, you at least get one flyer out of it. So its floor is like 2 mana for 2/1/1 flyers, which seems fine. And the ceiling is it sticks out and you run away with the game. Plus, we already have Fairy synergies going back to Wilds of Eldrain, Talion. Like, Fairies were like a real deck right after Wilds of Eldrain release. So we already have synergies for it. This card's got to be standard playable. I would be very surprised if it was not standard playable. But what do you think, Richard?
So they spoiled the Shocklands. Does that complete our set? Like, how's
our
mana?
We will have all the Shocklands once we get to Lorwyn, yes.
The biggest problem with this card is double black. But as long as you can reasonably cast double black, then it's good. And having a full suite of Shocklands will definitely...
It's going to help.
Help? So it's like... If this sucks, Seth, I am
then I don't even,
too
boobery.
Yeah, I don't even know what's going on anymore, right? Like, this
seriously.
Because you can always get the extra body, right? Because you do it at instant speed at flash. You're guaranteed to get one body. This has to be good. It's got to be.
And it synergizes. I actually think the Dimir decks might play it because it works really well with Kaido. You flash it. Like, the double black might be an issue, but assuming the mana is good enough, it does the same thing as like Flood Pit's Drowner, where you can flash it in and then the next turn Kaido off of it and you get a body left behind. You get the token. So I think like Fairies, Dimir midrange, I think it's just a really good card overall.
Watch it not be good because like we have another Steel Cutter or VV in the format and you're like,
that's possible.
Nice 1/1s. You're dead on turn 3. See you later. Sig, Wander Wine Wisdom, 1 and a blue, 2/2. Sig can't be blocked. Whenever this creature enters or transforms, target creature gains. When this creature deals combat damage to a player or planeswalker, draw a card until end of turn. At the beginning of your first main phase, you may pay white. If you do transform, the backside is you can't be blocked. When it transforms, target creature you control gains protection from each color until your next turn. At the beginning of your main phase, you may pay blue if you do transform Sig back.
What do you think of this card, Richard?
Hold on, wait. You can only transform when you attack. No, at the beginning of first main phase.
At the beginning of your first main phase, on either side, you can pay one mana to flip it back and forth, basically. And then you get a benefit as it flips back and forth, or the front side when it enters as well. So I feel like this is just, so it's a 2-mana 2/2 that can't be blocked. So that's already pretty good. It can still block, which is nice. I can't think of any 2-power 2-drops that are unblockable that can also block themselves. I think Ink Fathom Infiltrator is unblockable, but it also can't block. But this is already just like, if you want to be aggro, good stats. It's a Merfolk, which is relevant. I feel like its ability is good. If you play a 1-drop on turn 1, this on turn 2, its ability can target the 1-drop, you draw a card. And then once you start flipping it back and forth, you're just either drawing a card or forcing through more damage as you give something protection each turn. So in some sort of like tempo-y aggro deck, is this card not like pretty good? No?
Maybe. I mean, if you're happy with the 2-mana 2/2 unblock, because you only draw like the first turn this comes down, right? If you target something that has to connect, you draw a card. But then you need to play this flipping game, and the flipping to the backside doesn't really help you. Like, it just like forces through a creature
damage
combat,
basically,
right?
Yeah.
Or I guess it like prevents it from untapping and firing off a removal spell because the protection is from your next turn, but like you're gonna spend 2 mana to try to draw a card again, so it is not like unlimited card advantage. So it's really like kind of a 2-mana 2/2 that's annoying, that pecks away. Is that good enough? I don't know, maybe like blue tempo aggro.
Yeah, maybe
2 is like low power. 2 mana, it's like a bear. It's a bear. It's not enough to finish the game, right?
I feel like only being one to flip back and forth, compared to like some of the flip cards we've seen in the past, where it's like, oh, 6 mana and you flip it once. One to flip back and forth seems kind of realistic, especially in like the mid to late game. In the early game, it probably is just a 2/2 unblockable. But I could imagine like in the mid game, when you have a little extra mana, maybe flicking it back and forth is actually worth it. A way you can force through more damage. I don't know. The card really, it intrigues me. And it doesn't end up being good enough, but it definitely intrigues me.
It kills like removal decks, kind of. Like, my guess is you need to proactively flip it to give something protection from a color so your opponent can't untap and like use sorcery speed removal, like that evoke thing we talked about, right? So like they can't do it, but you can only protect one thing and it costs you a mana. Maybe. But like, I can see a board where all they have is sorcery speed removal, and then you just keep flickering this thing and like mess them like completely up, and like you just snowball the game and win. So maybe it's good enough, but it's also legendary. Like, here's a, like,
yeah,
it's a big problem. Like, you can't stack up the sigs. If your opening hand is like two or three sigs and you're an aggro deck, like you're kind of just dead, right?
Although, like, you can't get anything done. Richard, it does kind of get around this, because if you read it carefully, it actually has a different name on the backside. So the backside is Wanderbrine Shield. The front side is Wanderwine Wisdom. So you can actually have the backside and the front side on the battlefield at once. If you flip one of them and have the same side, then you're in a legendary yourself. But you can kind of get two of them on the battlefield.
I'll try it. I have a soft spot for Sig. Like the original Sig, anchored by Legacy Merfolk deck, baby.
Boy, we're talking old school. Old school. Draw that card. Get in that
Draw that
damage.
Card. No one sees it coming. Did you fetch? Oh, no.
I gotta ask you about one more card. We're running long, but I got to ask you, because I feel like this is a very Richard card for Commander, at least. Mutable Explorer is a 3-mana 1/1 changeling. It's a shapeshifter. It's a green card. And when it enters, you create a Mutavault token. Obviously, Mutavault, if you don't know, it's a land that you can pay one and turn into a 2/2 creature of all creature types. It's still a land. This card's insane, right? Like, I feel like, so in Standard, I know we got Overlords. We had a bunch of 3-mana ramp. In a deck that really cares about getting two creatures of any type on the battlefield, I think it could still be good there. But in Commander, is this not a staple, Richard? I know you, like me, are always searching for ways to ramp that does not require playing a bunch of basic lands. Is this not another one of those ways, and a pretty good one at that?
No, we have enough of them. Because we have Clifftop Retreat. No, Clifftop Lookout.
Lookout.
Which gets a land from your deck, which will be way better than Mutavault Token. And then we have like Wood Elves and things like that. Like, they enter untapped and they can also grab like dual lands and stuff like that. They can grab Surveil lands, etc. So this is good, but we already have so many of them that I'm not sure this makes a difference. Unless specifically you care about like the changeling aspect. And this like gives you two of them. Because Mutavault is effectively a changeling as well. So that gives you some synergies there. But we have so many of these, like, Wood Elves type things. Just look at a Phil deck, Seth. Like, there's so many Wood Elves. But this goes this goes hard with, whatchamacallit, Caretaker's Talent, right? So if you're playing Caretaker's Talent, stuff like that. If you're playing, like, Token Doublers and stuff like that, then there's a point to this. But, yeah, you have things that fetch lands from your deck, which is probably better, usually.
Yeah, and I think like you said, that's probably true. Maybe it's for some decks instead of every deck. I do think also, if you're some sort of tribal deck, like you mentioned, if you're like elves or something, and just like having two elves that are also your ramp spell, I think that's like kind of powerful. So maybe it doesn't go in every commander deck, but I love the design of it. I think it's a really cool way to like make a new card that also calls back to like an iconic old card that might not be like good enough anymore or playable anymore. But I think making a token
Like the Tarmogoyf. I'm just salty because the Tarmogoyf token. But like, why do we have to have tokens of like real cards?
Yeah. I guess that part is kind of weird. But I don't know. I like the Tarmogoyf token one too. But anyway, I think that's all we have time for today. I did get one good fishmail question this week, but we're going to hold it over to next week because we already went long today. But I got you, Cole. I got you. I still got the question. So listen for it next week. Richard, how do people send in other fishmail for future episodes?
All right. Give us your Dwight Schrute feedback at MTG Goldfish with the hashtag MTG Fishmail, and we'll get to your questions on air.
And I believe that brings us to the end of episode 555 of the MTG Goldfish podcast. So, Richard, thanks for hanging out. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks to our sponsor for supporting the show. And we'll be back next week to answer fishmail and talk about whatever goes on in the world of magic. So until then, have an amazing week, everyone. And this is the crew signing out.